I've repeatedly told you, World of Warcraft goofs. I don't want to be a husky half-brain, whatever the fuck that means. Did all your dogmen rejects have a husky half-brains club or something? You meet at the local arcade with your Dungeons and Dragons club. Y'all need to get out to a bar, have a drink, meet a girl. Fuck old dear.
Another one! Alright, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler, the more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
In true hardcore Husky fashion, even though the Huskies are in the wake of a huge victory over Texas and will be playing for the national championship next Monday night against Michigan, I am going to start off our show tonight with a complaint. And I will say this. How many times did we have the cameras from ESPN pan last night to Steve Sarkisian on the sideline as he crouched down and his play sheet in hand, and they called him, quote, the master of deception, and implied his genius with the play calling. They didn't even imply it, really. And talked repeatedly about how he was a role model for people out there of what you could do with your life. And how about we just pan those ESPN cameras just once to the Washington coach, Kalen DeBoer, and say, hey, guys, there's somebody that can be a role model for you. And there's somebody that came up from humble beginnings, and there is still some place in America where there's a meritocracy, and that would be football. And look what this guy has done and been a decent guy and built a nice culture. And when his wide receiver muffs a punt in a critical situation on national TV in the national semifinal, he's got his arm around him, and he's talking to him in a positive manner. And meanwhile, you've got Sark assistants screaming at the Texas running backs on national TV when they fumble. And I just think, hey, how about just like one little comment for the Washington coach about, hey, there's a guy that you can really use as a role model in your life if you're looking for something positive. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
I think Sark is still squatting on that sideline. I think that's the problem.
What about, were you guys a little bit disturbed by the crotch shots there a couple times? The camera started to pan in? I'm like, what are they doing?
No, my wife was super irritated about constant showing of Quinn Ewers' parents, and then she it was like, what was it, like 2 minutes left in the game, and
yes,
show
yep.
Michael Penix's parents, and she's like, finally, god damn it, finally, we show his mom and dad. We've all been leading the whole fucking game. I said I wasn't going to start out negative, so I want to be positive.
Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah,
Angry Joe.
That little moment DeBoer had with Bernard, you can tell. I couldn't really. There's just too much commotion where we were, but I couldn't really read his lips at the time. But I could just tell, just by the talk, he's telling him, you know, he kind of was giving him some positive reinforcement, you know. And I was like, oh, he's going to be back there and returning the next punt. And
oh,
sure
yeah.
He was. Yeah.
And I'm sure he said, you're going to have other opportunities to make a difference in this game, and don't you worry about it, and we're behind you or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, God. You know.
And then the Texas running back fumbled.
I was like, how did we get this guy?
And then the Texas. there's the title for our episode right there. But the the Texas running back fumbles, and then he's sitting on a folding chair, and then you got this over-agitated running back coach for Texas in his face screaming at him on national TV. And I was like, there's your difference in staff, and it's reflected by the head coach.
Yeah, but have you ever seen Cadetto mad?
You wouldn't want to.
You wouldn't want to.
You wouldn't want to.
I wouldn't want to see it.
He makes millionaires, guys.
I wouldn't want to see him mad because I wouldn't want to see another shit offensive line for, you know, year after year. But no, yeah, I was thinking earlier in the year, you could see kind of some of it with teammates and coaches when Tupatala had the dumbest play of the year, where I feel like the way they reacted to that, I kind of noticed the same thing. There was a decade. If we're talking Huskies stuff, probably ever. But yeah, the way they reacted was similar to where it was like, I don't know, when you do scream at someone, stuff like that, and that's not going to make it. Like, Bernard knew he fucked up in that moment. It's not like he doesn't know that, and you got to know that. So, yeah, I thought that was a great sign early on, even though it really flipped the game in the wrong way at the time, obviously.
Oh, 14-7 lead with the ball, all the momentum. No reason to think we would get at least a field goal out of that next drive. And next thing you know, we're tied. What a game, though.
Spots in the game. What a weird game that was. Not weird, I think. A game that was kind of like the last year's Alamo Bowl, because I rewatched highlights this today, and I think I got so stressed out by the ending that I forgot how many chances the Huskies really had to pull away in that game. Like, when they got both fumbles, and I think they ended up kicking field goals both times, and you're like, God, they were up by 17 with like 12 minutes to go last year, and then this year they were up by like 13. And last year Texas had the ball with a chance to tie late. They just didn't get it down the field. But yeah, it's actually oddly, and Washington led the whole time or it was tied, and it really just felt like maybe it wasn't out of control of last year, but it was pretty damn similar. And they were similar teams. So it's funny. I feel like the nation kind of got to see what we already knew.
Yeah, I didn't go into the game feeling 100% we were going to win, but I was leaning UW, and then I was thinking to myself, in the same way that this show is kicked off in regards to the theme of the Tale of Two Coaches, and Sark gets interviewed before kickoff, and his voice is squeaking, and he looks like he's all, he didn't look good, didn't look like a man in control. And then DeBoer, it's almost like, oh, you know, they're interviewing a man on a walk in the park or something. Not that he was sedate, but it's quite impressive. I think it was Race Bannon that said that he saw Kalen DeBoer being interviewed on game day, and then it reminded him of Coach James. And I haven't really seen that, but if you look at it in a certain sense, when he gets interviewed, there is a similarity there. It's all understated and factual and calm and not getting all worked up. And so that,
it's,
that
it's
aspect
a lot
of it is
of, it's a lot of, like I said before, it's a lot of positive reinforcement and coach speak, you know, when he does these interviews. Like, you can get – almost nothing out of a Kalen DeBoer interview, but you leave satisfied for some reason.
And wanting more.
Yeah. It just like, man, that guy's awesome. What do you say? I don't really know, but he's awesome.
But not in a snake oil salesman type of way, of course. It's just.
Yeah, exactly.
He's being earnest with you, but he's not telling you anything.
Yeah. Okay. I was almost going to go into a complaint. I'm not going there yet. I'm going to wait.
Wait till the 10-minute mark.
Waiting. He sent out a tweet this morning you know, like thanking Husky Nation or whatever. And I like quickly responded, like, I love you, coach. And I sent it. I was like, I genuinely love this fucking guy, man. Like, I love this fucking guy so much. Oh my
God.
You're
not gonna start crying, are you?
Oh, I almost did this morning. Like, remember when I texted you this morning? I woke up and because it's like the first thing you think of, you know? You're like, did we win the fucking Sugar Bowl yesterday? Are we going to the national championship? And it was almost like you had to try to relive what happened. I didn't drink any alcohol because, you know, I had to work today, but. It was just like, I was like, you can't be serious. This is happening. You know, I couldn't believe it when I woke up this morning. You know, I was like driving my car to work and I was like pumping my fist and I was like, God, I was like yelling again. I was like screaming on the way to work, you know. So cool.
Well, I thought about, I didn't do it, but I thought about going back into our archives and pulling out audio clips of the three of us talking after the 2021 Apple Cup. And and then just go, if we were to go back in time, it'd be like, hey, we're from the future. And by the way, 24 months from now, you're going to be playing for the national championship. Okay, sure. All right, that's funny.
Well,
very funny.
You would have to go probably. You could probably go post game of that Oregon game that year, and then maybe, the post game of like, was it Colorado at Colorado or home at Arizona State? I think was like the next game, and that was when Jimmy was like officially gone.
We lost at Colorado, yeah. Didn't we?
Oh, they were terrible that year. They were terrible.
It's one of the worst teams they ever lost to.
Oh, it was so bad. So bad. They blew a lead to Arizona State. It was, yeah. Oh,
normally, this is where I would normally say, hey, let's do a quick top 10 list of the most pathetic teams the Huskies have ever lost to. But now's not the show for that.
No, but it's always a reminder. It's always a reminder of, how bad that year was. Like, they lost to, like, that Colorado team was just had no pulse, and they lost. So, I mean, yeah, because I always go back to the Montana game when I think of, like, Jesus Christ, 2 years ago I lost to Montana. But you forget the Apple Cup was, like, basically just as bad because they just got blown out by a Cougar team that then went and got blown out by Central Michigan in the Sun Bowl. Like, it's like that Apple Cup was pretty embarrassing, and it was later in the season. That Apple Cup was just horrid.
And you think about guys that were on that team like Romu Dunze, right?
Yeah.
And he was on his way out.
Yeah.
Well,
there were a lot of guys.
Well, it's another feather in the Team of Destiny cap is I don't know feather or cap. I don't know where I got that from, but
You're
Team of Destiny. Yeah, another Team of Destiny theory is Montana wins the national championship and says, hey, we got to split with Washington because we beat most of those guys 2 years ago. They'll claim two national titles.
And here we are, 14-0.
Unbelievable.
Most ridiculous thing.
But we knew, look, to be fair, we knew there was talent on that team. That's a God. I mean, it just goes to show you how important, a quarterback is to your team.
Well, yeah, your head coach and your quarterback.
Yes. You know,
because I've argued with a lot of people over the years that the 2008 Huskies had, you know, had a lot of NFL talent on it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, you know, how do I do this without sounding too negative? Well, there was a narrative. There was a narrative that Texas, you know, had more talent. Oh, there's more talent on Texas, right?
And more physicality, right?
But I'm not even gonna, we won't go there yet. But like, okay, so every team plays basically a single running back and three receivers, pretty much now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so are three starting wide receivers on the Huskies? Are they NFL players?
Mm-hmm.
The starting running back, is he an NFL player?
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, NFL player.
You know the answer.
Left tackle, NFL.
Yep.
Right tackle. Rosengarten could get drafted
yes.
this year. I think he's coming back, and I think he's going to move to left tackle next year.
Yes.
So that's two guys on our line. I don't know about Kalepo and Buelo. They probably come back next year, and one of them maybe moves out to right tackle or something. Parker Brailsford's going to be a center in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 9 out of 11 positions are NFL players.
And you didn't even talk about Culp or Westover.
It didn't even get to Culp or Westover, which they're going to make a team.
Yep.
They are going to make a team. So this whole, like, oh, Texas has more talent. Like, what does that mean? Where? Top to bottom? The whole roster? Or are you just saying it from ESPN high school rankings, which guaranteed that's what it is?
And East Coast bias a bit, yeah.
But it's just, like, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. The better team won yesterday. Washington was clearly the better team. They never trailed the entire game. Never trailed.
And I would say a little bit of the narrative was also fed in part by the fact that Texas really closed out their season with a couple of big blowouts, including the Big 12 championship. So you see the 12-1 record, you're cognizant of the victory over Alabama, and you know that they beat, like, Oklahoma State 49-21 or whatever, and they blew out somebody in week 12. And so just, oh, okay. And so I think that fed into it. Whereas if you didn't see our game at all, but you just go, oh, the Huskies beat that Cougar team by 3 on a last-second field goal, that influenced the narrative a bit too. But I agree with everything you're saying.
Well, and then if you go to the defensive side of the ball, and there's probably 4, you know, NFL players on the starting 11, you know.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, you get Thule and Trice, right? That they're gonna be on NFL rosters. And Zion, I don't know. He could be like a late day 3 pick or something for a pass rush specialist or something like that, you know. And then
maybe Muhammad, even though he's far.
Yeah, Muhammad. He could be a good nickel corner.
Yes.
Mish Powell. Mish Powell's a good. He's a good football player.
How about his near sack of yours that forced that throw on that play, the second to last play?
Why is the replay not circulating on that? Why is there no replay?
Huge play.
Was yours down on that play? They never showed a replay.
No, that's a good point. I don't think he was, but you could tell from the back angle.
You never saw the other angle. So... yeah, there's no replay circulating from there. And remember that first run of Dylan Johnson before he got hurt, two plays before he got hurt on that first down run, they let 1 second off the clock. How is that possible?
Do you mean on our last drive?
Yes. When it was like a minute.
I did not notice.
It went from like a minute five to a minute four.
You get the hole pretty quick.
It's possible the TV clock was wrong the whole time or something, but yeah, they looked it on that play. Like maybe the TV clock had been wrong and they were like, oh, they just fixed it, and then they didn't say anything about it on the broadcast. But no, they legit that play took 1 second. I think the thing to me was, we've talked about it mostly with Oregon, kind of like the fake talent differential thing. Of like, you know, it always gets brought up about this big talent gap between Washington and these teams, but then, well, it's not draft prospect, and it's just based on guys that they signed at a high school that are, half of them aren't even on the team anymore. And I think the big thing, I think the thing with a team like Texas or Alabama and maybe Michigan and Georgia, I would say with like Washington, is like, I assume the depth guys are better. Like they have more talented guys that are plugging in at like, oh, they're like third best D tackle is actually a guy who's going to be really good, like that kind of stuff. But it's mostly about stars, and Washington has the better quarterback, and they have the better receivers, and they have one really good star on defense, and that means a lot. It means a lot more than having, you know, that your fucking third best linebacker is better than Washington's, you know, second best linebacker. So I think they get, college football kind of gets hung up in this depth of talent thing, when it's like, for the most part, who wins and loses these games comes down to the star, the coach, and the stars, and namely the quarterback. And there's not a fucking person in the world who would take Quinn Ewers over Penix. And no. Ewers was decent. I mean, his big thing is he didn't throw an interception, and he ran pretty well. Which was surprising. But yeah, I mean, that people keep underrating that. And you would take Penix over Bo Nix. You definitely take Penix over J.J. McCarthy. So I like our future final game in the history of his career. So yeah, I think that just gets overblown of like this talent, or they call it too, the like blue chip ratio or stuff like that. It's like, well, how good are your best guys? And that would take Trice way over the sweat guy on Texas. Like, that's an old school, like a 380-pound D tackle in like modern college football. Like, that's not that valuable. Give me the guy who is going to, you know, bug the quarterback all night and play every single snap. So that, there's that too. Like, I'm sure the glue guys and stuff on Texas' defense were more talented than the guys on the Huskies, but we're talking about the key positions, and it's not like they had a star running back, and their strength with their receivers, like Worthy and the other guy that they were really jerking off. But you know, the Huskies top three, they really love that 1 yard touchdown catch he had, which was like, yeah, it was a great catch. But like, even on the replay of the highlights I watched, they just talked about that catch for like so long. It's like, it's a 1 yard catch.
It was a good throw. It was a better throw than a catch. Because to be honest with you, like, we go back to what we talked about a couple months ago. We were talking about it last night with Elisha Jackson. It was like, God, he's right fucking there. There's something about his playmaking ability. He's just, he'll swipe at the ball and he'll miss, you know?
Well,
but not the last play.
But he looked like Richard Sherman against Crabtree on that final play. I mean, it was.
I'm getting 2013 vibes from that game and that play and this year. I mean, yeah. I'm getting some 2013 Seahawks vibes.
I feel like it's plays like that, you know, it can give you the confidence to you know, give a player that little extra 2% they need to be a guy, to go from being kind of a just a guy, or even kind of like a weak spot, like, which there's no way, other way to put it, that's what he's been. Maybe that's the confidence and the kind of just like muscle memory he needs to take that next step. And I mean, that's another thing, if you want to talk about the coaching of this team, the level of what they're getting out of every single guy on that roster is just fucking astounding. I mean, like, every single fucking player is as good as they could possibly be. Like, if you're talking about guys who are contributing, you're talking about a guy like, Meech Powell. Like, he's certainly a decent player, but I mean, like, most Husky teams, he's kind of just a forgettable guy, but he's made a huge difference this year. Jabbar Muhammad, like, a tiny second-team all-Big 12 guy. They've turned him into, like, the best cornerback in the Pac-12. You know, you have the linemen. Like, you're talking about Buelo and Kalepo. Like, they were kind of guys who were lost on the roster. You know, a typical guy who you'd expect to suddenly be transferring to, like, fucking Cal or somewhere and disappearing, or Arizona. And instead, they're guys who are probably going to be, like, first or second-team all-conference guys next year with a potential NFL potential. So that is just the ultimate testament. Culp. I mean, you have Culp. Culp blocking all year has been incredible, and I hope that means that will show up when he can make an NFL roster. And then Westover, what did he have, like 5 or 6 catches for like 60 or 70 yards yesterday?
Just
insane.
Just money.
Yeah, and he's a walk-on guy who those guys, there have been plenty of walk-on, you know, try-hard kind of like local Husky guys, but usually in a fucking setting like that, that guy makes no catches, and you're like, oh, he had a couple of good blocks or something. But same for Culp. It's like another guy who, like, a talent, has some talent, but, like, most coaching staff, he's a guy who's already transferred to, like, the Cougar or the Beaver, and you're like, oh, he gets, like, 4 catches for 40 yards a game on, like, a Cougar or a Beaver team. But instead, he's on this stage, and they're getting him to be, like, this guy who's, like, he's not, like, a Will Disley, but he's, like, a good stick lineman out there on a lot of plays if you watch.
I wish Penix would have hit him on that like that wheel, that tight end wheel route where he threw it right over, he threw it just over his head. And you know, maybe if Culp, like, you know, he would have really had to lay out for it, but I mean, man, that would have been so good, so cool for him to, you know, catch a touchdown. But I mean, I'm nitpicking, so I'm really nitpicking. I was like, God, that's the one play like I want back in that game I'm thinking about yesterday. I'm like, I wanted Culp to have that so bad.
Yeah, and I think that's that was to me another good example of like how good they are at using what they have too. Because I remember literally in my brain right before that play, I'm like, I got a feeling Culp's going to, because they hadn't thrown to Culp, there's going to be a Culp play. Then it was there, and I think, you know, Pettic just barely missed it, or, you know, most tight ends are a little bit probably taller and longer than Culp, and they're able to make that, like, we can make that work. But, yeah, I mean, they're also just, like, they're getting the most out of these guys, and they're using them just perfectly across the board. It's just awesome. I mean, there's plenty to nitpick, especially at the end of the game, but like just the overall experience and the overall coaching of the team, it's just like roster development. Like, I don't know what you'd even bitch about. I mean, there's not anyone on that team who feels like they're not getting the most out of them, like at any position.
And one thing I want to add too is that given the obviously most of our games are officiated by a Pac-12 crew, I thought the refs did a good job yesterday. And if a Texas fan is listening to this, oh yeah, because Texas got penalized 10 or 11 times and you guys only got called like 3 times. But there was, I'm objective. And if I felt like that Texas got screwed on some particular call or spot, I would say so. But, I thought the replays, even the ones reversed against Washington, everything seemed very fair. And there wasn't anything where like, oh my God, they just completely changed, the refs just completely changed the flow of the game or whatever, and that didn't happen. So,
yeah, I thought Texas got bailed out because they could have got called for a holding on Braylon Trice every single play he was getting held and mugged. So. I don't know what the bitching is about with the officiating.
Every play.
I don't get it. It's every penalty they called on Texas was really obvious. Legit.
Yes. They're obvious. And by the way, their play of the game almost ended up being a pass interference on that one guy. That could have been the play of the game.
What play?
When the guy tackled Rome, Rome had beat that guy by a mile. And Penix underthrew it. He threw it late. And Rome had to slow down, and the guy just tackled him. Just straight up tackled him. And
well, maybe we're thinking different plays. Because they called that one, though.
They called it, but it was you know, it was a touchdown-saving pass interference.
Oh,
and the
yes.
Huskies didn't score. They punted on that drive.
That's right.
Yeah, so that could have been the play of the game because, you know, I don't even want to talk about the possibility of Texas winning that game. I don't want to ever live through that again at all. But yeah, that ended up being a pretty huge play.
And it's not that I want to see, you know, Sark like homeless and living in a shelter or something like that. it's not like that. But I just want to preface my remarks by saying it's not like I wish horrible things to happen to him, but he's not a guy that deserved to win that and get to the championship.
Yeah, no, that was one of the worst feelings about when it started to look like they could lose that game. I mean, it was, you know, much worse than, say, like, hypothetically, like, the Oregon game in Seattle. We were like, well, you know, we were trading punches, and they pulled out the win. Like, that losing last night would have been like, how in the fuck did they lose that game? Like,
exactly.
Texas did nothing to deserve to win that. You know, they had a couple – they had the drive before the half, and then now a bunch of freak shit when they were down by 9, like, and Sark, yeah, and happy to be the Sark who just could never win big games. You know, the Huskies were fucking had Sark for, what, 5 years, and he just could never win a big game. And then to have him break through in that way, just getting completely, like, a bunch of fucking breaks like that, yeah, that was going to make it hurt extra, even more than it would have just like that, because I don't hate Sark. I'm glad that he got hired away by USC for no reason. I mean, they were going to be stuck with him in purpose going, you know, he was always going to win seven to fucking 9 games at that point with the Huskies, and they're going to be stuck with him forever. Are they going to have to fire him and then be like, can you fire a guy like that? Like, but yeah, he and that team in no way deserved to win that game if they were going to win it. Like, it maybe the football gods were smiling on Washington, you know, for all we've been through. Or maybe if they do score a touchdown, they would have missed the extra point and they would have got overtime. But yeah, that was not a game where, you know, other than, you know, maybe give Sark the football credit for keeping Ewers in there even though he was concussed. So good for Sark on that.
Sarcasm alert to our listeners.
Ewers took a big – he took a bad shot to the back of the head, hitting the turf there.
And he immediately reached for his head.
Yeah, and he sat there – if you noticed, on the sidelines, they kept showing him, which I'm sure Texas probably wasn't stoked about, and he was just fucking sitting there not talking. I don't know what his usual, like, sideline demeanor is, but it looked like he was clearly instructed to, like, sit here, don't do anything. Like, minimize your, like, movement because you're fucked and we're not going to take you out and put in Arch Manning, which sucks, because, God, could you imagine if they would have put Arch Manning in there?
Oh, man.
Interception by Mahomes!
Yeah.
It suddenly could have been
20,
like a...
to the 10, to the 5!
Yeah, well, it could have been like a 31-point game.
Washington would have had like a – they would have had a 13-point lead, and they put in Arch Manning, it would have turned into a, you know, a 27-point lead. And they would have said, well, if Ewers would never have gotten hurt in that game, we don't know what the final score would have been. It's okay. We'll take it all the way to the – to the championship. We're like college football's version of Ron Paul. Everybody likes him, but the news won't talk about him. What do you think Jed Cohen's thinking right now?
Well, I think USC is enabling her to be the best Jen Cohen she could be.
Do you think she's rooting for us? Think for repping the pack?
Well, I mean, isn't she supposed to be a Husky fan? Like, wasn't that her thing?
She met John James.
Her dream job. Yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully she was kind of forced out or something. I don't know. But, yeah, I there's a lot of people, some of who
forced out the USC.
We could one of the great things about this season is there are so many people, a lot of them which come up on the board of, like, what are they doing right now? What are they thinking? Like, Jen Cohen, Jimmy Lake, JT Tumalau, and Emeka Egbuka, Josh Connerly. Kwiatkowski, because I mean, I don't think Kwiatkowski would still be the D coordinator, but like he
Malik Egbo.
Well, I don't think they even wanted that guy. Taki Taimani. Yeah, it's just the best part about, you know, like winning and at this time so quickly is that, yeah, there's a good roster right now of like, boy, it must suck to be watching this if you're this person. I mean, you even throw in the whole Oregon universe of like, like Oregon, like, are we the second best team in the country? And we had to play Washington twice and lost. And now, you know, it's not impossible that like in some way too, that like they could have gotten in, like the Pac-12 format was different. Not the one that they were so excited about that got them the rematch of like they had the one loss and then other teams lost and they got to the playoff and got to play Washington again. It would be possible they could have played Oregon in the championship for the fucking in Houston. It's entirely possible, but it's not. Instead, they had to play Liberty on fucking 10 a.m. Pacific time with 8,000 of the national brand crowd. And I mean, yeah, it's there's a great fucking peanut gallery right now of people who it's like, you could have been on the train, but you didn't want on the train. So fuck you. Have fun.
Well, the one I want to point out though, that like with Kwiatkowski, I don't blame him because what was the alternative?
I know.
Jimmy Lake. And in fact, that was the thing that was really the canary in the coal mine where something was wrong. If you weren't on the inside and you go, why would he leave?
That was
go
half
to Texas?
The reason he left. That was half the reason he left.
I don't think he. Yeah.
What was going on when Sark got hired? Sark got hired in December of 2020, January of 2021. What was the future of football on the West Coast during 2020?
Yeah.
COVID?
There was uncertainty if they would even play in 2021. That's why Kwiatkowski left.
Oh, I don't know if that was the reason.
Well, come on. He went to Texas. They were playing 12 games a year in Texas. Kids moved from Washington and Oregon to Texas to play football. Parents pick their kids up to bring them back. I can't go there anymore. I will get so fucking mad talking about this. I can't go there anymore.
Well,
oh my God.
I mean, you could throw that into the terrible gumbo pot that was like everything that was against Washington 2 years ago, which is also like culturally this region and this fucking state and this city and like everything is against the culture of what you would think would produce the college football national champion.
and don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, as late as mid-October in Texas, there were unearthed from the Freedom of Information Act that was put in. Jen Cohen wanted to retain Jimmy Lake, folks. To those of you that argue with me a little bit about Cohen.
I'm declaring from now on, we stop using the question mark after we say we, because we fucking earned this. This isn't we. We earned this. All this shit that we went through. All this shit we went through. And here we are. We earned this. We earned this.
It was a long road.
Wooly Duke's dad, my father-in-law, he should get an all-expenses-paid trip to the national title game for still buying season tickets and going to every game in 2008. We went to every fucking game. Every game. I missed one. I missed one because my grandfather was dying in the hospital. But other than that, we went to every single game. Every game. So, yeah, people like my father-in-law, they should roll out a red fucking carpet for him and all the money he's pumped into this program. He earned this. Like, he earned this. Big time.
Yep.
Yeah, so, anyways, good thing spring game attendance doesn't count for all this. You know, it's a good thing 100,000 Bama fans showed up for a fucking game that doesn't count. a bunch of 5'6" dumb looking guys from Eugene showed up to Autzen Stadium for a fake fucking football game that didn't buy you shit except for a win over fucking Jamie Chadwell. Losers.
As promised, Joey Dangerously wasn't going to complain about anything today. I knew that would last about 7 minutes.
Nobody showed up to their spring game. They don't deserve anything. Yeah, no one wants to watch a fucking practice in the rain. Dumb. Let me know when the real football starts. Dorks.
I mean,
seriously.
The beauty and the curse of college football is how long the off season is. It kind of sucks being a fan because you have to deal with all that shit and just made up. No other sport has more just like made up narratives and like stuff just to fill the air because you don't play games from basically, New Year's to Labor Day. So it's like stuff that doesn't matter, including a lot of fucking recruiting rankings, gets just so pumped up. And I mean, I hope this isn't the end of like an era where a lot of things came together to make a team like Washington where they are, where it's like guys stayed, guys stuck around for extra years because of the COVID shit. Like, they had a coach who just flamed out so quickly, but still had talent from the previous roster. Then on top of that, like, I think the portal was a little less crazy 2 years ago than it is now with guys transferring out. So, guys were a little less, quickly to transfer out to where they would now. But then I guess I also throw in, I think it was a good thing when they talked about like the Peterson recruiting and like that stuff like that. Like they're signing guys who actually want to be here, not just guys who are coming for money or coming for like because they think they're going to win a national championship, all 5 years that they're there. So maybe it helped guys not transfer out because they actually wanted to be at the program and be in Seattle. So I kind of went on a different path there. But my hope is that we're going to see more teams like Washington continue this path, not less. We're hopefully not going to see Georgia and Alabama win everything, Ohio State win every year. And then the teams that come up aren't going to be Texas A&M and Oregon and fucking Ole Miss who are just buying players. So, that's another part of it that I just hope is another positive that continues for the program and for college football.
Yep.
Are you calling Ohio State soft? Are you calling Ohio State soft? Drew Holtz learned his lesson. Not to call
I don't even know what Ohio State is, but and I know they've had a lot more, you know, overall success than Washington, but you know, if Washington wins the national championship this year, that'll be two since 91. I mean, how many has Ohio State won in that span? One, I believe. And then, how long does it go back before Ohio State's got two?
But does that entire program's success depend on how many national titles though? You know,
hey, look, also part about being a college football fan is you find the measuring sticks that work for you. And then you throw them in other people's face. Everyone does it. That's why I said, like, overall success. I mean, I think Ohio State's lost, like, they've went to the national championship game, like, three or four times. And I'm also forgetting that they won in 2002 when Miami was a better team, but they just got lucky and won that game. So I am. Okay, so, yeah, no. I don't need to worry about Ohio State right now. All I know is in – Washington has not won the national championship. They're headed into a very tough game that I really don't know how to size up, other than I think it's going to be a pretty tight game, but I really don't know what it's even going to look like. Where Texas, you know, going into the Texas game, I kind of had a feeling what it would look like, though I don't think Kwiatkowski really played the prevent this time, which was interesting. It was interesting because I think they probably knew. They're like, well, it didn't work last year. It's never worked for anyone to beat Washington, so we might as well just play straight up. And it turns out they can't beat Washington. They couldn't beat Washington that way either. So I kind of knew what that was going to look like, but I have no idea what this the Michigan-Washington game is going to look like.
There was times I saw, you know, like some deep zone coverage, like with Quit used to do here, and to quote Kevin Calabro one time calling a, you know, a Sonics game, Michael Penix was hearing signals from other planets, like he was just, I mean, he was just fucking, he was lighting up the sky against Texas. It didn't matter what coverage they were throwing out there. I mean, he was like,
he owned the field.
Like,
it was a man in full.
Yeah. Yeah. He was possessed.
That's a good point.
I think it was Ray Allen. Ray Allen was like hitting like 10 threes in a row, and Kevin Calabro just went nuts. Yeah, I think that's what I got it from. Ray Allen is hearing signals from other planets.
And by the way, when Kevin Calabro, along with Sonny Sixkiller, called the play-by-play on TV for the Miracle in the Desert with the Brock Huer to Reggie Davis miracle touchdown in 1998.
I forgot he was on the call of that.
It was so great to listen to him do a Husky football game. It was so nice.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Well, he did games on, was it Root Sports?
Yeah.
I think he did games on Root Sports for a year or two.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. That Root Sports, that was like Barry Tompkins and Petros Papadakis.
I like Petros. I didn't like Barry.
I love Petros. I love Petros. I wrote down a bunch of things to go through. I'm worried ESPN's not going to pump up this game, even though it's on their channel. I'm worried they're not going to build up this game. They're two Fox Big Ten teams, man.
All right, they should be building it up. You got your first nominee for next year's tinfoil award.
I do think, you know, I'm sure ESPN's not stoked about it, and I do think they were, you know, definitely pumping up Texas more than Washington for a lot of reasons, and I'm sure it helps that, you know, SEC Texas is going to the SEC and Washington's going to the Big Ten. Yeah, it's not really in their
Let's look at Quinn Ewers' parents again.
Just look at them. Let's look at the very average fucking quarterback who's like literally the definition of like a fucking B minus. Let's look at them again. And my favorite, God, we don't make the whole thing bitching about the announcers, but there was some line that was like, Quinn Ewers, he dreamed of going to be the Texas quarterback his whole life. It's like, he signed with Ohio State out of high school.
I
really
yelled that at the TV.
Yeah,
it was
like,
that was so funny when Wooly Duke yelled that yesterday. Like, he signed with Ohio State.
Like, yeah, Texas was fucking devastated. He was like the number one recruit in the country, and he fucking signed left the high school year early and signed with Ohio State. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know. The media, we could bitch about the media for 3 fucking hours. And, you know, the fun part about this season, too, is shutting the media up and proving them wrong. I mean, there's still one more game to go, but they also hate Michigan, too. So I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. They're just going to not. No one's going to say anything if they don't like Michigan either.
Well, they could literally build this game up, like ultimate good guy versus bad guy if they wanted to. Like, you know, Michigan faced zero punishment. I mean, what? Harbaugh got suspended for 3 games? Big fucking deal. Like, he could have still he could have still phoned in or from somewhere and, you know, gave advice or tips or whatever. It's, yeah. I want to give a shout out to Bleached Anus Dog and Call Me Big Earn because earlier today, I know that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They were earlier today on the boards at Hardcore Husky. They were already comparing the Elijah Jackson, deflected pass to the Richard Sherman NFC Championship moment. And they even Big Earn even put in pictures to contrast the two plays. So I did not originate that. So, and then there's a picture posted. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, it's not that important. There's a good video of, I don't know who posted it, but it goes from that play and it like follows basically more or less Elijah Jackson's POV for like the next minute and a half after that play that captures the whole thing. And it's pretty awesome.
And then there's a picture posted by Texas Dog in the same thread, which was leading up to the game. And it shows Quinn Ewers sitting at a media booth and there's literally nobody in front of him. And he's looking off behind him, and there's about maybe 15 reporters gathered around Arch Manning.
Weird. That the whole thing is just strange to me. I don't understand.
It's a cult. It's almost like a cult.
It's just, it's fucking weird. Who cares? Like, I know we're not in the same situation, but, like, if the Huskies had, like, fucking, I mean, kind of were a bit like Sam Heward at this point was still on the team or something, that situation. Like, you're playing, about to play in the semifinal. Like, who cares about your fucking backup freshman quarterback? That's just strange, and I would think that there's a good chance that would affect the culture of that fucking locker room and that team. It's just weird.
Well, on a small level, it was like that with Keith Price and Nick Montana.
Yeah.
On a smaller level. I mean, there were guys like, oh, Nick Montana's the eventual starter. Like, Keith Price won't last very long. It's like, have you really watched him play? Keith Price is way better than Nick Montana. probably not even close.
There was that old story, though, and this goes back a decade now or more, but when I was still talking with Kim Grinnells, when, you know, I was in my last days with Dogman and stuff. And we had seen a bit of Keith Price and stuff. And I had said, well, I think he'll be the next starter. And then Kim Grinnells was saying to me, quite literally saying that, you know, hey, he goes to practices, I don't go to practices, and he talks to the coaches, and I don't talk to the coaches, and he said there was no way that Keith Price would ever start ahead of Nick Montana.
Yeah, and he was on the field, right? You've never been in the tunnel.
And in the tunnel, right? Different conversations, but yes. So, and I just thought, well, I don't know. I mean, all that's true, but I just, you know, I like what I see in Price, and then, you know.
Yeah, I remember we're going into the weeds
Northern
a little
Iowa
bit.
Or whatever.
Tulane. I think he went to Tulane, didn't he?
I was just throwing that out there because that's where Shane Courtney went. But
yeah.
So as we come down the stretch, any thoughts about Michigan?
The boys are back in town, baby.
I was going to have the episode be called Washington is the Ron Paul of college football, but I don't know if the boys are back in town might be. I'm not sure which I'm going to go with here. But
I'm not sure what that means in this context.
If you're an old school, we're almost back on top. We're not done yet, but yeah.
Of course, Ron Paul did win the presidency. So, but I like the boys are back in town. I think that'll be the title.
Okay. All right.
And we're playing Michigan again, ironically.
If you're an old school Michigan, fan, are you a little like, do you have a little PTSD about facing Washington, not on probation Washington? Or not potentially facing probation Washington?
Well, they beat the Huskies twice in the Rose Bowl, so it's not been all a beatdown or anything.
Yeah.
They won the 81 Rose Bowl and the 93 Rose Bowl against Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I mean, the last time Washington played Michigan, it didn't go that well. But I mean, it is kind of ironic and fitting, too. I mean, like, that was the big game they missed in 2020. Michigan was supposed to come to Husky Stadium. But, I mean, the thing to me is, yeah, I don't think I was going through watching Michigan stuff and going through their stuff today, and, like, they have definitely not played an offense like Washington, but I don't think Washington played a defense like them. And that's really hard to kind of, you know, predict what's going to happen with that. I was kind of encouraged, like, their stats, like, Blake Corum averages, like, 4.1 yards per carry or something. Like, I mean, in the Pac-12, it's like, if you got 4.1 yards per carry, it's like the 34th, you know, best YPG in, like, the Pac-12. You're like, Oregon's running backs are, like, both over 7 yards. And so it's like, they are not
Scatabo.
Yeah. It's like they just aren't that dynamic. But I mean, the way their defense attacked Alabama when they tried to pass, definitely there's, I'm a bit scared of that, but I like that they put that all on tape now. And I just don't think Milroe is anywhere near what Penix is, and fucking insane to say, but like, yeah, Alabama's receivers and tight ends are not even in the same universe as Washington, which is fucking crazy. But yeah, so it's gonna be interesting, and I don't think it's unfair to say. I mean, yeah, if the Huskies can find a way to get up like by 14 or 10, it's gonna be really hard for Michigan to come back. And I think They got lucky, like, in the very first play against Alabama, McCarthy threw a fucking pick to an Alabama guy, but his, like, toe was out of bounds, so it got called back. So it's kind of the perfect play for them for him to remember, like, oh, yeah, I'm not that good. I need to just play it really safe. But then also didn't have to have the consequences of it, even though, like, he basically just got lucky and got bailed out on it. So if they get a fucking chance for, like, a McCarthy fucking pick six or just early momentum swinger, they cannot drop it. Like, that could be the difference in the game right there. That to me might be the biggest thing, is if they can get him to turn the ball over or not.
They had a game, Michigan did, where I didn't see it, but I heard that McCarthy didn't even throw a pass in the second half.
Yes,
that's right.
I think the average ranking of the offenses they played is like 91 or something like that. They've played like 6 or 7 teams that are in the below 100 as far as like offensive production.
It's interesting, but I mean, to be fair, I think the other side of it is like, I think you go to Washington, I don't think Texas' defense was very good. Their front was good, but like, it was a good matchup for the Huskies. Defensively, like, I think Oregon was way overhyped about how good that defense was, especially the secondary was clearly not very good. And then who else do you go to? Like, Utah? I mean, if Michigan is what we think they are, it could be a really big challenge for them to have to play a team that could really just play defense. Because even last year, too, they never really had to play, again, it was the hyped-up one with maybe, like, Oregon and, like, how good were they? So it's going to be an interesting challenge. And, you know, there was also a lot of times, I don't know if it's still the same, where like in the 2000s and maybe the early, like the 2000s, where like these Big Ten teams would come into play a team that could like throw the ball and they would just get run out of the stadium because they just didn't ever face that and their athletes weren't that dynamic on the at like out in space. And that is also potentially possible. I would not put any money on it, but it's also possible they just aren't ready for that kind of attack.
That's kind of what I was looking at when I was watching, you know, Michigan. I was like, oh, okay, so they're, you know, they're like big, you know, they're physical and all this stuff. It's like, how are they going to keep up with Washington's speed? How are they going to match up with that?
Physicality.
Yeah, but I don't understand. Pass blocking is physical. I don't get this whole like oh, you got to run the ball to be tough and, you know, big boy football is running the ball. Like taking a bull rush while backpedaling is pretty fucking physical.
It is, but I mean, okay.
It is.
I wouldn't want to
block Braylon Trice.
If you're mano a mano on the line of scrimmage, there's something about saying, just like the 2000 Huskies, when they would wear down opponents in the second half, we're just going to run the ball right at you and there's nothing you could do about it.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, like they're saying, oh, Harbaugh, he won't stop running the ball like Sark did. Well, Sark was down the whole game. You know, he's always down at least a touchdown, it seemed like, right?
Well, yeah, but so it's like, at halftime, I made that post where they had ran the ball 18 times, they had thrown 18 times, but they were averaging 6.4 yards a carry. That should have been more like a 25-11 balance than a 18-18.
Well, but are they averaging 6 yards a carry because they've passed it 18 times and ran it 18 times? Because if they ran it 36 times, what if they were only averaging?
Well, I didn't say run it 36 times. I said 25-11.
I'm just saying. You know,
it's the it's the big thing with football, I think, especially college football, that it's really hard to figure out what Joey just said. I mean, yeah, it's like, I'm pretty sure it seemed like to me, Washington, if you looked at Texas, their two most talented guys were Worthy and Mitchell, the receiver. They're both guys who are projected to be like late first rounders. And their tight end is, I think, the top tight end of the draft. Like, I think maybe they say, hey, we'll try to slow down their passing. We know Trice can get to the quarterback, and just, you know, modern college football coaches and football coaches don't want to run the ball. I mean, kind of just trust that, hey, they're going to get bored or just not trust it. So let them run the ball. Like, they'll change it up enough. We'll get some incompletions, get them against the sticks, and we'll get them off the field. And that's it. So, yeah, where Michigan is like, I don't know. They might just stack the box and put, like, eight guys up there and be like, okay, we dare you to throw over top of us, and maybe you'll will a couple times. Like, I am very curious and excited to see how they defend Michigan. It's going to be really interesting.
And if they do that, though, then I would love to see us, you know, again, like I was saying, going into the second Oregon game, use our tight ends more, and if assuming Dylan Johnson can run at all, have him sneak out of the backfield and hit him out in the flat once or twice.
Yeah, and it's another thing with Michigan is I was, like, looking through their depth chart, and, like, their left tackle is Ladarius Henderson, who's, like, a ASU guy who's kind of like a journeyman, like, good but not great lineman there. He's like, I don't think he's a top half of the draft guy. Drake Nugent, their center, the Stanford grad transfer. This other Stanford transfer guy, Mel Pinton, is in the rotation. And then their best guy, Vinter, is done for the year. Like, their offensive line, I don't know if they're capable, which I think represents the 4.1 yards per carry. I think their backup, the number two running back, was like 3.8 yards per carry or something like.
Wow.
I think they run, but I don't, like, I don't know how, like, I just don't know how effective they are. I don't think they're just the juggernaut, and I think they're going to have to hope that their defense, they're kind of like a, God, they're almost kind of like a poor man's version of the good Stanford teams, which is crazy to say that they're playing for a national championship where it's like, even though it's really good Stanford teams, the way they would play, they would end up in games, like you saw a couple Husky teams, one they lost, where it's like they would play really well, but the way they played made it so hard, easy for the other team to stay in the game. And if the other team just got a break or made a big play late, like, they could win. And it feels like this Michigan team is like those teams, but, like, not as talented. So I don't know. I don't want to sound – I'm going to start to sound like the fans of the other fan bases we make fun of, but they could be a good matchup.
Well, it's funny you brought up all the grad transfers on the, you know, on their line. So their center that got drafted by the Seahawks last year was the Remington Award winner.
Yeah,
That Oluwatimi, he was a grad transfer from Virginia. So, So like these good linemen that Michigan has had, these starters or whatever, they haven't even been developed. And Harbaugh's been there like 7 years or something at this point, 6 years, 7 years. So he's not even developing his own linemen. It's kind of weird.
It's an interesting point.
And I don't think I don't think they're as good as the linemen he had at Stanford when Stanford, him and Shaw, when they were rolling teams like that. So it's just, they're an interesting team. They're kind of a team you look at and you're like, why, how are they this good? So, and, you know, Washington definitely has flaws, but you never look at them and be like, oh, I don't get why this is a good team. I mean, the most simplest way is, like, they have an amazing quarterback and they have three NFL receivers. Like, that's always going to be good. So Michigan is just kind of this balanced across the board, talented, but not like, not filled with NFL guys. Like, I mean, mock drafts don't mean anything, but you don't see any of their guys in, like, the first, at the top of mock drafts. Like, they're not projected to be that. So they might just be, they're kind of a lunch pail team. I'm not going to take that away from them and start to sound like, you know, people who talk shit in Washington, but like, they're a hard team to figure out right now.
Well, they did everything I wanted them to do. I was worried about facing Alabama potentially in the championship game. So I did not want to see I didn't want to see a mobile quarterback in a high school offense, like, poison the Huskies.
It's true.
That was the one thing I feared the
most. Who was the third string walk-on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just watching Quinn Ewers, you know, run around yesterday, I was like, why does this only happen to us? He's probably never rushed for more than like 4 yards, you know, in a game this year, and then he's just running wide open all over the field, you know.
Yeah, I would not love. I'd weirdly rather face Quinn Ewers, who's actually a pretty decent, pretty good passer with two good receivers and a good tight end, and a bunch of then one Alabama guy who can just run. That's it. You're just like,
God, yeah,
yeah. Because you see those times when Ewers ran, and you're like, oh, those are all like 60-yard touchdowns by fucking Jalen Duggs at Milrow.
Yeah.
And every third down where they got them off the field by like creating a completion, he would have just ran. Or he would have ran until like a guy broke open and he would have hit the guy. So,
there's one fluke in that whole poison, and that was Khalil Tate in 2019.
Yeah.
Like, didn't do shit in that game. I was terrified because that was down in Arizona, and I was terrified going into that game.
Well, the first quarterback
in
Division I history to run for 400 yards in a game.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was worried about.
Well, get ready for J.J. McCarthy. He's kind of got that, I don't know how it's hard to say. I don't think he's even good at, like, Trace McSorley, but he's kind of got that vibe of, like, he's not that good of a passer, and he's not, like, a really scary runner, but he can run just enough. Like, on third and nine, he's just going to be absolutely unstoppable.
I don't get the NFL draft type on him.
I have no idea what that is. That's
bizarre.
I don't know. Maybe people are just
looking at.
He's
no Elvis Gerback, damn it.
Yeah, maybe people just look at like, oh, Michigan's like 25-2 in their last two seasons. This guy's their quarterback. He's like 6'3", 205. Sure, why not?
I think the measurable, it's like an instant, like, oh, 6'3", 205, or 6'4", 215. Like, okay, he's good. And then we have to be proven he's not. Hey, he can throw it. He could throw a football.
Yeah, he can kind of run, but he's not really. I mean, he's not like a He's certainly no Khalil Tate.
But boy, Penix just had command of the field. It was really something.
I mean, you got to say, has to be up there greatest quarterback game by a Husky of all time. I mean, it's hard to go too much further than that. But like, just like a lot of those throws, a lot of those plays and throws, like he had like, how many, like 5 to 10 that it, like Mahomes and people make, and they just fucking lose the, like announcers just lose their minds. Like 6 to 7 in one game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's check in on Quinn Ewers' parents after that great throw by Penix.
Yeah. And I mean, lot of those,
that coverage yesterday was embarrassing. Embarrassing. The only time I could think of the Huskies getting that treatment was Grandpa Sankey. Because they went to him about 5 or 6 times. But that was probably more of the disability angle. Not being pro-Washington.
Yeah.
So if Penix's parents were disabled, they would have been on TV about 15 times.
Well, there you go.
Well,
There's the key.
Yeah. No, on top of that, with the like the there's like the designed runs of Penix and his ability to avoid sacks and still make those plays. But then a lot of those throws where the receivers weren't that open, it was just masterclass. Masterclass. The fact that he didn't win the Heisman is just fucking outrageous. And I'm not even like a anti-Jaden Daniels guy. Like I definitely would have given it to him over fucking Bo Nix, but and I don't hate Bo Nix either, but anymore. But yeah, I think he was pissed off that he didn't win the Heisman, and he wanted to show, you know, with his first true opportunity to show the fucking country that that's who he was, and that he showed it. He definitely showed it.
Well, I think it's more that, I mean, we're not inside his head, but I mean, I would tend to think that it's more that he got healthy.
Yeah. And I think some people had pointed out, maybe with other podcasts or people on Twitter and stuff, that like the elements too, like it was a bad weather year. He really seemed to do better in good weather, you know, being in that dome, same with against Oregon in the championship game. Being in a dome probably just, like, you know, feels good to him, you know, being a guy from, like, Tampa. But, I mean, that might be overthinking it because he definitely had some good games in Indiana too. But I do think it gets lost in the shovel how many shitty games, how many shitty weather games there were, and how hurt he probably was in the middle of the season.
So we'll find out in about 6 days whether – the Huskies are the retarded team of destiny, as they've been called on Hardcore Husky, or whether Harbaugh, you know, can he finally win the big one? So we'll find out. So, any final thoughts?
Harbaugh doesn't feel like a guy who can or should win a championship. He just feels like a in pro wrestling. He feels like the. What's the term? Joey will know. What's the term for, like, the guy that they always put, like, and you probably know good examples, like, wrestling always has that there's guys who will always play for the...
There's a jobber or enhancement talent, as they'll call it. You know, like, the Brooklyn Brawler was a guy who went out and, you know, gave a guy a five-minute match, and, you know, he was actually just kind of a backstage road agent, you know, it was like, you know, it's like a training match, basically. But, you know, Harbaugh is more like an Iron Mike Sharp or something. You know, maybe a Barry Horowitz.
What about a Susan Lucci?
You could potentially be a Susan Lucci, you know. You know, I was thinking, if you want to go pro wrestling, they could build this game like WrestleMania 1. I mean, you could have the ultimate babyface in Washington versus the ultimate heel in Michigan. I mean, it's there for the ratings are there.
Well, the ratings are really there.
It's oddly felt like, if you look at, like, a flow chart, of like, as it more seemed more and more and more, like, Michigan was on a collision course to play Washington, just at some point, even if it was just the Rose Bowl, it seemed like the closer, more likely it's gotten, the more everyone has forgotten about how everyone hated Michigan 2 months ago. It's like, every week that goes by, it's like, We forget a little bit more about, like, we were supposed to hate Michigan and they were going to get the death penalty and Harbaugh was going to get run out of college football, to now where it's like, oh, isn't this a good story? It's a hardworking team and this guy who, you know, has always had success at college in the NFL but never really got to that, you know, Mount Everest. Boy, good for them. Why were we supposed to hate this team 2 months ago?
But see, there's a difference. But when you're a university and athletic department that stands up and defends your program instead of bending over and grabbing your ankles, we saw around here, there's a difference.
Yeah, they stuck up for their guy.
Yeah, always do it.
And they weren't going to take any shit, and they obviously just gave up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, USC, shouldn't they? I've said this about three times now, but they should have had to forfeit the win over San Jose State because they played an ineligible player, and that story just died.
Yeah. Yeah.
But are rules rules or are they not rules, you know?
They're not rules, apparently. Well, I mean, on a similar note, we just waited a month and then just trotted Tybo Rogers back on the field. So we're back.
Oh,
we're
boy.
Back, baby. We're back,
baby. I mean, especially if Dylan Johnson can't go. Yeah, don't tell anyone in the media. Talk. Don't get that. I mean, I believe it was only media source that I've really heard even talk about it was, I believe, Grinnell's on the Dog Man podcast was like, yeah, he got falsely accused of something, turned out like they had to kind of hold him off for his own good, and like oh boy, I hopefully no one finds out about that, especially if Dylan Johnson's hurt, and it's like, oh, the only other running back on the roster with any fucking youth in him is the guy who, you know, had this fucking horrible fucking at least accusation that happened like 2 months ago.
Well, yeah, hopefully not a lot of people just listened in the last 5 minutes. So
let's not have it start right here. Let's all
citizen of the year award, Tybo Rogers.
Now yes. let's never speak of this again.
Well, I will say just in closing, though, I mean, if it's a false accusation, what a horrific, shitty thing to do, and that deserves prison as much as anything else. So,
exactly.
If that's true.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, we will talk a week from now.
All righty.
I hope so.
All right,
go Duck.
Go Duck.
Go Duck.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Sway's Wigwam, yeah.
Sway's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's Gift to College Football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information. All for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. I have to redo that one, but...